Welcome to Cybersecurity Insights, the podcast for the cybered.io learning community. Our goal is to bring cybersecurity practitioners the latest and most relevant education and training to upskill and dive deeper into topics that matter in today's modern cybersecurity world.
Good day, everyone. This is Steve King. I'm the managing director at cybered.io. Today we have Yossi Applebaum, who's the CEO and co-founder of Cepio Systems, on the show with us. I've known Yossi for 7 or 8 years now. Not only one of the smartest and most innovative thinkers in this space, he's also a man of complete integrity. I wanted to bring him on today to talk about what his perspective is on current job he's doing, which is to run a very successful security company while at the same time fighting a war in Israel, which indeed is what he's doing. Yossi was, interestingly, the guy who discovered the silicon backdoor and motherboards that were coming from China in, I think, the 2018 kind of timeframe, being manufactured, distributed through the Supermicro supply chain out of San Jose, ending up with every federal government agency on the planet. And so that distinction alone is pretty remarkable. That was a huge Bloomberg story that suddenly disappeared after running for a couple of weeks. There's no doubt what was going on there, and there's no doubt what the result remains today, but that's a completely different story for another time, perhaps. So, yeah, Yossi's been in the space for 25, 30 years or so. A very smart network guy. And we welcome him to the show and forward to hearing his perspective on what's going on in Gaza and in Israel and on the future of this war.
It's a challenging time, you know. It's not the first war I'm involved in as an adult, and it doesn't make it easier. You know, it's like every startup is totally different story. So every time we have an event like that, and you know, the thin line between a military operation to a war, it's more like a political statement than anything else. And you know, I started my career in the intelligence in '91. In 1995, there was a major military operation in Lebanon. In 1996, 1997, I don't remember, there was a major operation in Gaza. And since then, you know, it's like every couple of years, there is a big cycle. But this one is different in any perspective to any operation we had in the history of Israel. Because in Yom Kippur War, 2,500 roughly soldiers were killed within the scope of the war, and Israel was way smaller. Yom HaHakel was killed and all of that, but it was way smaller, and almost every house had at least an immediate relationship to someone who died. Our neighbors lost two sons in 1 week, and it's devastating. But this time it was totally different, because civilian 1,400, so let's assume like 1,100 civilian were murdered, including kids. And it's not murdered, it's slaughtered. It's literally barbarian acts that, you know, some people are still not even digesting. And I'm talking about people from my own that are still, you know, struggling with their day-to-day and not digesting. It's I don't like the comparison, you know, population size versus that to what's in U.S., meaning, you know, 30,000 in U.S. numbers and all of that. It's bullshit. You know, it means nothing. But it means that our 1,100 people, I'm not talking about soldiers, that, you know, soldier, you're a soldier, you may die. But even a soldier should not be left on the field burned and missing head because someone thought to take the head to his village in order to show how big a man he is. So, you know, we are fighting animals, and unfortunately, creatures like that should be treated in a way that will save the world from their existence.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, there's no doubt that these are uncivilized savages with a very specific agenda to wipe out Israel, and and if they could, the West. And so it's hard to fathom, frankly, from where I sit, why the rest of the world doesn't kind of get this, right? Why there are any people in the United States that look at this and you know, cheer on Hamas or cheer on the Palestinians, other than just pure ignorance. I mean, I get pure ignorance. We have way too much of that. But you know, how are the communications failing us so badly that people...
Because communication eventually delivers. We need to remember that we live in a world that first communication delivers what people want to hear, because otherwise people don't hear, and then there's no commercials. And the second thing is, even internally, the story of, you know, if people in the West Bank will come and say, hey, Israel occupies us, which is true, by the way, in the West Bank, not in Gaza. Israel is not in Gaza since 2005. And Israel is occupying us, and we are the weak part of the story, and it's not fair, and we want our country. And you know, people don't listen to history. Yeah, you got a 5 or 6 time chance to get your country, and you chose always the path of terror. But let's ignore that. When civilians in Gaza, in tens of thousands, crossed the border after the Hamas broke the border and came to rape women and came to steal stuff and murder just for the sake of fun, and hundreds of thousands of them were cheering and using violence against kidnapped elderly and kids in the streets, that's not civilian anymore. When you pick your side and support the terror organization, in my eyes, you are a terrorist, regardless if you hold a weapon or just a stick. And in addition to that, the media, well, there are plenty of reasons, but, you know, there are plenty of media toilets that, generally speaking, their teams are literally local teams in Gaza, like, you know, Arabs from Gaza. And the story they bring is, you know, literally no one even doubts. So Hamas says someone blasts their hospital. Well, Hamas is a terror organization. Why won't we believe them? And they say Israel. So it makes sense because it's a terrorist organization. There is no chance they lie, right? And after 48 hours, everyone had to come back and say, yeah, most probably. What do you mean most probably? We have records of Hamas leaders talking to each other. What do you mean most probably?
Yeah, I don't know how much that influences the world, but the world is in this dilemma for a really, really long time, right? I mean, it's thousands of years. And no matter where you go, almost in America or Western Europe or wherever, or Eastern Europe, you have this discrimination and this hatred, and it follows is you guys around. I mean, you know, and no one can explain it to me, including my Jewish mother. So
I think it's because there is no logical explanation to that. Always, you know, and it's not always from outside. You know, the big Hamas protest plan here in Rockville, Maryland, on Sunday, is led by two Jews that are extremely progressive, extremely left wing, and extremely, you know, we need to stop the fire. Like, let's get a ceasefire for the sake of everyone. And I keep saying, on October 6th, we had a ceasefire. We didn't break it on October 7th morning.
Right.
They broke the ceasefire, and now they want ceasefire? Let us finish the work, and there will be quiet. But we need, and I demand my government, and believe me, I'm not extremist in any way, but I demand my government, and I'll protest against my government to death if they will not satisfy the need for security. And the need for security is, at this moment, that Gaza will be a test case, because otherwise Hezbollah will do the same. And we need to remove Gaza to ground. I'm not talking about killing everyone, but we need to remove Gaza. There will be no standing building in Gaza for several years. And if they'll build them, we'll break them. But that will be a memory that the crazy Israelis lost their mind. And for the next two generations, they will think again and again if it makes sense to shoot even one bullet. Because otherwise, 1,400 or 1,100, whatever the number is, will be 10 times bigger or 100 times bigger. Because the only thing they do is taking the money that ships and innocent give them and steal it from the people in order to build an army.
Yeah, of course. And what you want to try to get the hostages out safely and captured soldiers out safely. When do you decide that it's done the best you can? You can't do anymore. It's time to just turn everything to.
I'll tell you something. The most pressure you put shorten the time that they will bring them by themselves in order to avoid that. And if your threat will be a reality, you may lose some kidnapped. And unfortunately, you know, it's my people. But on October 7th, at the end of the day, I called the deputy ambassador here in D.C. and I said, you know, we will start protesting and supporting Israel and all of that. But listen, I consider the kidnapped, and I'm protesting to the release and all of that, but I consider them as a loss. We lost everyone, and everyone that will get back is a great surprise and a gift from God. But until we'll, if we'll put that as a weight on our shoulders, we will actually decrease the chance we'll get them. So brutality in this time is the right time, is the right thing, not just for retaliation and revenge. And revenge, revenge is necessary here because we live in a tough neighborhood, and these neighbors should see what happens when we lose our mind. But in parallel to that, this will increase the minimum chance of getting these back.
What do you expect from Hezbollah?
Hezbollah is not, I would guess, you know, things are so fluid, but I would guess that Hezbollah will not get full blown into that because their power is always by doing making a surprise. There's no surprise anymore, right? The entire relevant Israeli army is there. So for them, it's getting into, you know, face-to-face fight, which they have no chance in that. They may kill few, will kill more. In this situation, Hezbollah has very limited capability of surprising. Yes, they have unbelievable amount of rockets, and these rockets, you know, can be stopped to a degree in the sky, and are being stopped right now quite successfully, you know, above 90% never touch ground. Having said that, they still can create a lot of damage. I would wish that Hezbollah will jump into that because we need to clean that area. And I would say that if Hezbollah is not doing that, we know the mistake we did with Hamas is that, you know, there is a dispute if the intelligence said it will be on Saturday morning or not. No one cares because that's not the right answer. It's not the right question. The information was there up to leadership. You just listen to them. We're going to conquer you. Here's videos of us, Hamas, training, and Hezbollah is doing the same. So I don't know what Hezbollah really do. I to be honest, I don't think Hezbollah knows yet what the Iranians will tell them eventually to do. Having said that, I think Israel cannot let Hezbollah to stay away of that because they have the same plan. They published the plan. So hopefully we'll have that one after another and not both of them in the same time because, you know, it is a lot. But I hope that when we'll finish with Gaza, we will be proactive. Because if we won't be proactive, there will be the next Saturday morning on October 7, 24, where Hezbollah will surprise us. So I prefer to pay the price in advance and civilians will not be hurt.
Can you afford to pause this war at this point? I mean, yeah, can the Israeli army, military defeat a combined arms force between Hamas and Hezbollah?
Israel is in its best situation in wars since ever. You know, our previous wars, like Yom Kippur War, was disaster. We literally almost lost the country. We are not even close to that situation now. Not even in a remote proximity to where we were in 73. And you know, it's funny, I wrote you an email about that. You know, seriously, my 10-year-old daughter was looking because she talks to her grandparents and she talks to my brother that lives there and her cousins and all of that. Then she was like, "Dad, I'm really worried. Maybe we should invite everyone here." And we did. But what happens if Israel losing? And I was like, Tamar, we cannot lose. And she was like, how do you know that? And I was like, first, we are way stronger than they are, and we are way equipped than they are, but we cannot lose. That's not an option. And it's really hard to understand that without going there. You know, people ask why 8200 generated so many companies. People ask why these startups has a bigger chance of success in the eyes of investors than other. It's the same mentality. Like, you cannot get into a project and not complete it. It may take more time, it may take more money, it may take, but failure does not exist. Does not exist. That's literally the core element in the culture. And some may say stupid because some companies should not have stayed because they really don't bring anything. But and some projects never should have been built. You know, there was a legendary Israeli crazy idea about building our own jet plane years ago. So we had in the 80s an initiative called De La Vie, which is like a lion. And it was the most advanced, seriously, the most advanced technology in jet planes in, you know, like fighter jets in the world. F-22 and F-35 are way advanced, but, you know, 30, but we couldn't afford that. And, but the you know, the ego and the need to be under our own and, you know, not be controlled by anyone pushed that. And we, I think we spend more than $10 billion on an idiotic thing. So sometimes the non-failure culture is dangerous, but generally speaking, in a war situation, we cannot lose. We'll fight until we'll win. It's not, you know, white flag or something like that. We've been in white flag, and you know, in Auschwitz, that's not going to happen again.
Yeah, indeed. How is the international community? What do you feel about any support at all around the world?
We do. It's actually unbelievable a surprise to see what's going on now in Europe. I think the governments in Europe, I think almost all the governments in Europe are very supportive. You know, the British, of course, but also the French and the Italian and all the Eastern Europe. I'm not talking about the Russians, but of course the Ukrainians and the Poland and Hungary and all of that are extremely supportive. And we can hear the voices that coming from their parliament of, you know, being more militant than the Israeli government in a way. The people are different, you know, it depends. Germany is very, well, for obvious reasons, of course, but the common people in the street depends if they are, you know, progressive or less progressive. And of course, all Europe is flooded with, you know, immigrants from Middle East. That doesn't make it easier. But this protest against Israel is also a protest against the, you know, the Scotland Yard in London and against the, so it's not an Israeli problem. In South Africa, we got amazing support. In New Zealand, we got unbelievable support. The really, really nice thing to see now, even if it's not always public, is the amazing support we got from the, you know, the Emirates and from even Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia was very, very, very vocal about that. But, you know, behind the scene, even Sepio got really good indicators about support from the Middle East. And in a global, you know, a close person to me that she's working closely with, you know, raising more money for equipment and all of that. She got a donation of more than $1 million from a very rich family in the Emirates. And their ask was only one thing: make sure that every bullet we pay is going to kill a Hamas guy and not just being shot for no reason.
Yeah, yeah. How is the company doing?
So it's okay. You know, the population, the demographic of Sepio in Israel is less young people. So we have only few people that were called to their units for reserve time, but many are giving their time, spare time to, you know, there's a lot of initiatives from cooking homemade food to the soldiers to support so many families that lost their houses there and literally lost everything. So Sepio is deeply involved, and Sepio people, more than anything else, are deeply involved in that. So that's one thing. We assume that there will be a bit of an impact on our Q4 results because of the, of course, some exposure to the Israeli customer that the economy stands still, and some Middle East leads may, it's easy to talk behind the scene, but officially issue a PO in time like that, I maybe I'll be surprised, but my assumption it's not going to be.
Oh, it's not going to happen, no.
But you never know. You know, we have a discussion with two Saudi companies, and they are extremely pushing forward, full steam ahead. So you never know.
My question was prior to October 6th, how was the company doing in terms of, market traction and understanding and brand authority and brand awareness around what?
So Q3 was a great quarter for us. We won the largest contract ever. It's a seven-figure contract for Sepio, paid in advance, which is nice. I call it non-dilutive investment almost, but seriously, I think that with Greg's work, by the way, on couple of tier one opportunities, we have tier one banks paying, and we have a huge manufacturing and the DOD and DHS and quite successful journey through 22 and up to now. But I think that one of the amazing things is that I saw it through my career is that when you get your first six-digit contract, you are so happy. But then one piece of your mind, at least my mind, is like, is it going to be now a repetitive thing or one time? And if it's one time, how can I explain that to my investors? So because then there is a crisis. And then you see that a repetitive six figures happens if you are successful. And then you see the first seven-digit, and I was like, okay, great news, but bad news. And then you see that suddenly seven figures looks repetitive. And I think that that is a very strong indication that we see all across verticals, from smart campuses to manufacturing to healthcare, of course, to pharma, to government, of course, and financials. It's going all around. I think that, we are going to be one of these rare companies that in 24 will be not burning any money anymore. And we are going to, together with partnerships and not just the selling directly to customers like the published one with Lenovo, we are doing quite nicely exposure to, tier one opportunities that are in a magnitude that we've never been exposed to.
That's great. And congratulations, Greg, for bringing that in, that big win.
Maybe we'll keep him.
Yeah. He was worried about it. Have you changed the product at all since the last time we talked?
There was a lot of evolution to the product, I would say. So, one of the really cool things that we realized after last time we spoke was, the need for visibility is not a nice to have. And the challenge always is, how do you define the visibility and what do you want to get out of that? What is the business problem you solve? Because visibility for the sake of visibility is cool, but who's paying for that? And our, I think, journey in the last several months was quite successful in showing that our ability to show the risk, focus where it is important, saves time, saves money, and decrease the chance for, depend on the vertical, depend on the customer, to have bad days. And bad days, it's not always an attack or something like that. This is a worst day. But it's sometimes, something that you are outside your policy, outside your need to be compliant with some regulation or whatever. And I believe that we did quite good job in the last several months on communicating that in the right way. And there was a bit of an impact on the product because, the feedback was like, great, but how can you automate that as much as possible? So we had to highlight features or give more attention to functionality or usability of functions that were not highlighted as as in today.
How about generative AI? Is there any leverage opportunity for you?
So it's funny, we had a discussion about that literally 2 days before the war. And it is quite valuable for the, let's call it the midterm future. One thing that I believe cyber solutions should be is to be not a tool, but a member of your team. So if you have a tool that you go and use and digest information based on the fact that you need to reach out to the tool, it's not efficient enough. People don't have time. CISOs and security teams are overwhelmed with so much information. But if you have a system that can bring the information to you in a human way and come out with suggestions and proposals on how to mitigate and let you answer simple questions, do you want me to do it for you? Or other organizations, because we see a global thing, other organization from your type is doing A, B, C, D in terms of policies, and you're doing only A and B. Would you like us to suggest policies that will help you to be better secure? And then by a click of a mouse or a voice, whatever is the communication, you can solve a problem before it is even becoming a problem or becoming better aware to threat, to a risk, to whatever. I think generative AI here is the right, let's call it front end for providing that interaction with even smart users, not just inexperienced ones.
Yeah, there are a lot of pretty simple use cases, it seems to me, that you can leverage there and you know, get some product advantage as well. So that's great. You know, I'm probably out of time here. I appreciate you doing this at the last minute, Yossi, and it must, I don't know how it must be fighting a war and running a company at the same time, but my hat's off to you and Greg and the rest of your team. And, you know, I wish you guys the best. And yeah, I hope we figure out a way to end this thing in a way that, as you say, to your earlier point, changes the landscape and doesn't make this just another treaty or truce or peace or pause or whatever we used to call them over the last 5 or 6 or 7 of these things. You know, it's got to stop. It's got to stop. So I wish you the best.
Steve, thank you so much for your support and your warm words and your email before. But I would add one thing. Peace is something that everyone wants. And peace is achieved by people, for people, by leaders. We need leaders on the other side and on our side that are willing to do that path. But first, we need to deal with people and with human beings. And the entire story of Gaza is not dealing with human beings. And unfortunately, Israel need to take a stand and protect our country, because otherwise there will be no interviews and discussions about how it is to be a CEO of an Israeli company if we won't be protective enough.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree 100%. So thank you again.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
So thanks again to our audience. Hopefully this was entertaining and informative and give you a much broader perspective on what's actually happening in the Middle East as we speak. And until next time, I'm your host, Steve King, signing out.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Cybersecurity Insights. You can connect with us on LinkedIn or Facebook, or send us an email at social@cybered.io. For more information about the podcast, visit cybered.io/podcast. Until next week, stay safe and secure, and we'll see you on the next episode of Cybersecurity Insights.